Our guest is John Scott, who was with, well, tell us who you were with. Tell us how you got into this crazy business.
Well, I was a little kid in Memphis, Tennessee, and my mom encouraged me to be a DJ at 10 years old, so I said, that's what I'm going to do. And at 18, I got hired by a station called FM 100 in Memphis, who we had 400,000 watts of power, believe it or not.
Wow.
Second most powerful station in the U.S. We were grandfathered in back then.
What year was this?
Well, this was 67 that I went to work for FM 100.
Wow. How long did you work there?
I worked there for about 4 or 5 years, and we could play anything we wanted to play. We broke bands like crazy. ZZ Top called Memphis their second home because of us. And we just played what we wanted to. We were really lucky.
Well, but you know what? In this podcast promotion, man, we started out defining what a promotion man was. Then we defined radio because radio came online in 1922. Mm-hmm. And then because I was with Warner Brothers, we talked about the history of Warner Brothers. But the thing about being in FM dial, because we also discussed AM and FM, was that FM was kind of the Wild West where people like yourself would come in and play whatever you wanted to play. And that was when, like, Stranglehold by Ted Nugent, I think, was like 8 minutes long. There's a lot of 8 minute long songs. Stairway to Heaven was
Freebird.
8 minutes.
How about Freebird? You know?
Yeah. Well, back then, the go to songs were Alice's Restaurant and In the Gata de Vida.
Yeah.
Because we had it timed out how long it was to take to smoke a joint, take a piss, and,
right. And get
back to the control room.
Right.
Yeah.
But
we used to always call it the take a dump song.
So what happened was promotion people started coming around our station because they said, well, if these guys are playing anything they want, they'd be coming in to see me because I was playing anything and everything that was good in my consideration. And if I played a bad record, my audience would call me out immediately. And they made more money than DJs and they had an expense account. And I thought, well, I wasn't making much money in that station. At that station, you know, you guys know what that's all about.
Yeah.
So one night, an MCA promotion guy came in from Los Angeles and said, "We want to hire you." And I thought, "Well, I'm going to miss radio, but to me, it's the same thing being a DJ turning music onto fans, listeners, and a promotion guy turns radio stations on to music. So it's kind of the same thing."
Right.
So, in my book, you guys haven't seen my book yet, John Mellencamp wrote the foreword to it, and he kind of explains in his mind what a promotion man is. Would you guys like to hear that?
Yes, give us a little piece of that.
Back in the early 70s, this is John Mellencamp writing this, back in the early 70s, radio was a magical place, and music meant everything to so many people. Everyone was in a band or wanted to be in a band or wanted to be a DJ, or just anything to touch the music somehow. There was this line of work that the general public never knew anything about. The guys that did this line of work were called promo men. What in the world is a promo man? That was my first question. What did these guys actually do? Well, there were all kinds of these guys, local, regional, national, ones that worked hard, some who barely did anything, some that just hung around and drank, and some that knew more music than any 10 guys should know. But the one thing they all did was, at one time or another, they all loved the music. This bunch of yahoos was willing to do anything to get what they loved on the radio, and then, through radio, reach the general public. When I say do anything, I mean they would do anything. They made deals, trading one artist against another. They promised gifts and trips and dinners. Sometimes even wild, illicit sexual parties. At least that's what I've heard. You name it, and a promo man could get their hands on it if they needed to. Why? Because at the end of the day, it was for the love of music. Of course, there were egos involved and money and the relationships the promo guy would have with a certain artist or the dislike of a certain artist. But even then, it still came down to music. John Scott, the guy, was the first national promotion director that I, a 22-year-old beginner from the middle of nowhere, had never met. He and a regional promotion director named Dave Lonko believed in me. Imagine that. A stranger saw promise in what I was just barely learning how to do. He believed so much he lost his job or quit his job over some unknown kid like me named Johnny Cougar. Mind you, it had just been put out. Nobody else in the world even remotely believed in it. Imagine that. I'll always feel an attachment to John, although I've not seen or spoken to him in many years. I'm grateful for all he taught me about the music business, about other artists and what they were doing, and about how to behave in a radio station, parentheses, in my case, that didn't always take. I'm grateful for the immense amount of work that he did and all promotion men did. Promo men, we'll never see this kind of person again. All the good promotion guys are gone. They all died out or got too old or moved to someplace better. But the work they did will not be forgotten or unnoticed because we are still dancing and singing to the songs that these people introduced us to their hard work and effort that helped shape American culture. Yes, these monkeys called promo men did the business that provided the music that became the ambience and the backdrop of all of our lives. They should never be forgotten. Thank you very much, John Scott. Signed, John Mellencamp.
Well, I think our business is done here. Thanks, John. Have a nice day, and that's been a great podcast.
Trying to work around. Anyway, so back to my story. So I went to work for MCA.
Well, let me interrupt real quick because I want the listeners to know that John Scott had written a book, and we're going to get there in a minute. But before we get to the book he had written, which is called Tom Petty and Me, we know we want to learn more about you and how you came through, which is what you were about to tell us.
Yeah, because you're our first guest who's ever started in radio and made the transition to promotion man. All the ones we've had.
You know, I think it's important that radio guys become promotion men.
Yeah.
And originally, record companies were afraid to hire DJs because they said they'll probably won't like this business and just go back and being a DJ. And when they hired me, I started doing pretty good. So they then hired Wayne McManus, who was also a DJ, and Bob Osborne, who was also a DJ.
Yeah, because I actually came from the record warehouses, but that's usually what happened is either they came from radio or they came from the actual warehouses or the record stores.
Right.
Because bottom line is, do you love music and how much do you love music? And like John Cougar Mellencamp so eloquently said, these are people that sometimes they knew more about music than 10 men combined.
So, John, that you started talking about Wayne and Bob there, who did make the transition from radio, as you did, and they became some of the best known. They were kind of like a tag team there in L.A. for a while. I mean, they were killing
it, man.
I mean, they did a great job together.
Yeah, I worked with Bob and Wayne at MCA, and we both have stories. I have stories about being with Bob and trying to work the Johnny Cougar record, and I have stories with Wayne about us. So many things with the Who Party, the famous Who Party in Houston in 1976.
Wow.
That Bubba Wayne had to bail out Pete Townsend, Keith Moon, and John Entwistle because of a party he threw at the Summit. It was the opening club, opening that concert at the Summit. And Bubba Wayne was so smart. He went to the city council and asked the people at city council if he could change the name of the city that night to Houston. Because people coming in, and when the Who came in, he wanted them to see, they said put signs everywhere, whatever. So Wayne had these signs that strapped around the Houston, welcome to Houston population, whatever it is, and it said, welcome to Houston.
That's a great
story.
And
they were all over the place.
That's awesome.
Well, I got to tell you one thing. Before we got you on here today, and I knew you were close to Bubba Wayne and the Bubba Oz show there, we definitely going to get these guys on, and we got to have them come tell these stories. Because, I mean, that right there is just a small sample of the stories that these guys have tossed at me since I've known them for the last 25 years. So I definitely think that's going to be a good setup for those guys. But today, it's all about you. So let's transition into the book, Tom Petty and Me, and talk about your first belief in Tom before he blew up. And, I mean, you were there. I'll kind of throw a little spoiler out there. The last show that Tom did at the Hollywood Bowl, he mentioned you, right?
Yeah, at the last show, he did three nights at the Hollywood Bowl, and I only went to one the last night because I had heard it possibly could be his last show. And I was interviewed by SiriusXM that night on the SiriusXM channel, and I didn't want to go backstage because I knew it would be chaos, so I just went to my seat with my daughter, played four songs and didn't say a word, and after the fourth song, he dedicated this song to me because of the work that I did for him in 1977, and they were about to be dropped by ABC Records, and I happened to go to work for him, and, he, and that's what he did, he said, and he went to radio with a vengeance and got that sucker played and onto the charts. So we want to dedicate this song to John Scott, I Won't Back Down.
Nice.
And that's awesome.
I literally was in tears, man. It was like...
What a wonderful, that, wonderful thing. And then your daughter sitting right there. How beautiful is that?
It was incredibly beautiful. I mean, we both were, you know, just taken aback. Neither one of us knew it was going to happen. And it was one of the special moments in life. And he's done other shout-outs to me. But this one was the special one because I think that was a gift he left me.
Yeah.
And what we try to convey in these episodes is the relationship with the promotion person, because it's not Promotion Man. That just happens to be the name of the show. But the promotion people that worked for the record labels and the passion you have for these songs and these artists.
Yeah, that's how I got to meet Tom.
Well, one thing that I remember about Tom Petty, and I was just getting in the radio, this was, I want to say 1981. I was at a college station, so anything we got in the mail, we were excited about, you know, especially when you get some kind of cool vinyl. And I'll never forget my first introduction to Tom Petty was this heart-shaped 45. And I think the song might have been Change of Heart. It was one of his earlier tracks.
It was Change Your Heart or Listen to Her Heart.
Listen to Her Heart. That's it, yes. And I got this in the mail. I was like, I am hooked, and I became a Tom Petty fan just like that. So it hit me instantaneous, even though you had a lot of more time invested into getting him to even to that point. So let's talk about the ABC thing finished. And
yeah, first of all, I'll tell you that I think everything happens for a reason in the world. In your life, and not everything, but majority of things happen for a reason, in my opinion. When I went to work for MCA, I was doing pretty good, and they moved me to Atlanta to do a regional job. And then I was still doing pretty good because I was hanging with Skinner when they first came out. And then they flew me to Los Angeles to be head of album promotion. And I was flying with The Who for 2 weeks, and I was flying with Lynyrd Skynyrd for 2 weeks, and then Elton John for 2 weeks. And I was like, you know, a kid from Memphis on the back lot of Universal Studios, you know, like king of the world.
Right.
Like a dream come true for a Southern boy.
Can you just tell your favorite story about each one of those bands? Like, what is your favorite story about Elton John?
I really don't have a lot of stories about Elton. He was a very kind, reserved man. He didn't really speak to many people on the plane. I'm not sure if I can tell you a good, I can tell you a good Who story, but I can't say it on the, I can't do it on the air.
That must be a real good one.
Any podcast, yeah, I can't. And let me just say this. I was doing good at MCA. I was happy. Everybody liked me. Skinner gave me a gold record for the live album. I presented it to me at MCA Commissary. But the real story is Johnny Cougar. That record came out, and I listened to it, and I liked a few songs. And we were in a meeting with the president and all the people, the salespeople and the, you know, the publicity people. And the head of the president picked up this record and said, anybody listen to this Johnny Cougar record? And I'm the only one who raised my hand. And he said, well, what song? I said, well, Chestnut Street Revisited. And he puts it on the turntable. And about 30 seconds later, he picks it up and tosses it across the room and said, who the hell would play a record by a kid named Johnny Cougar? Who signed this guy? And the A&R guy held up his hand. He said, why? He said, well, just got for a couple of demos. And his manager was Tony DeFreeze, David Bowie's manager. And I perked up right away because we had played David Bowie from the very beginning stages. I knew who Tony DeFreeze was. So the A&R guy said, you want to go? You like this guy? I said, I like a few songs, yeah. You want to go see him? Yeah. Flew me to Seymour, Indiana. Me and Dave Lonko, and we flipped out. He like blew us away. We knew he was a superstar. And I remember calling back that night going, this guy's a star. Don't drop this record. And they like, John, what are you smoking? And now I promise you, we're straight. We weren't, but we had smoked a joint, I admit it.
Yeah.
It was the 70s, you know. But anyway, so I went back to L.A. and recounted the story, and I just started working Johnny Cougar like crazy, like a madman, and was going nowhere. I was getting a few ads here and there, and then WMMS ads. When WMMS in Cleveland adds a record, people pay attention.
Yeah, that's a big station.
Yeah, so me and Bubba Oz, we rented a Cougar, because Johnny wouldn't come out there. We rented a Cougar to go around to all the radio stations, R&R, Tower Records, and the pictures made the front pages of the magazines. And there's me and Bubba Oz standing there with two girls. One girl had a shirt named Johnny, and another shirt said Cougar. And we had a Cougar in the middle of the picture, a live Cougar, and the handler was off to the side. But anyway, they said, "Hey, John, just stop working this Cougar record, will you? We don't like him, don't like his music, don't like his manager. He wants to rent a billboard on Sunset Strip because WMMS added it, and we're not going to do it. Stop working." I said, "How can I stop working this record? I just got it played on the biggest station in America."
Yeah. What song was it that you got played?
It was Chestnut Street Revisited.
Okay.
Okay. They said, "Yes, stop working." I said, "I can't." "Yes, you can." "No, I can't." "You're fired." Wow. What? So they fired me because I wouldn't stop working Johnny Cougar. And Wayne will tell you that he took over my job. And the first thing they made him do was raise his right hand and say, "I will not work Johnny Cougar." I remember Wayne telling me, I had to raise my hand and go, "I will not work Johnny Cougar."
Wow.
Okay, you got the job.
That's hilarious.
So anyway, I was just bought a house in L.A. and didn't know what to do. And about a month later, Charlie Minor, the kingpin of promo men,
yes,
called me and asked me if I wanted to go to work for ABC Records as head of album promotion. I said, "I'm there on Monday morning." And I didn't even ask him what the salary was going to be. I didn't care because I didn't know what I was going to do. And I get there, and he makes me raise my right hand and go, "John, I will not ever do a Johnny Cougar stunt again." I had to do that.
That's a funny story, man.
It's good.
He says, and it's like, he said, "John, I'm not kidding you. If we don't like an artist, do not interfere. Why'd you stick up for that kid, Johnny Cougar?" And I said, "Because I think he's a superstar." And of course, Johnny Cougar became John Mellencamp.
Right.
But didn't nobody knew that at the time.
Was that on Riva Records? Like
Riva Records, it was, yeah.
A baby label?
Distributed by MCA.
Yeah.
So I said, "Okay, I won't do it." But I had my fingers crossed behind my back. And because, I'd go through a brick wall if I like a record, kind of like you guys. You
yep, amen.
You know, even if you're a radio guy, you'd go through a brick wall for a guy. If you're a promotion man, you'd go through a brick wall if you liked the record.
I've been through a few.
I'm sure both of you guys have.
Yeah.
And so anyway, 3 days later, I'm in my office getting ready to go to lunch, and a white album falls down from the closet. And I went, "Oh, wonder what that is." Nothing on the label. On the cover, back cover, pulled the vinyl out. There was no tracks listed. It was just blank. And I said, "I wonder who this is." I just said, and out of curiosity, I sat down and put it on, and I hear "Breakdown."
Wow.
And I hear American Girl. And I'm telling you, I had goosebumps all over my body, and you guys know that feeling, too.
Yeah, definitely.
If something hits you like that, man, it's just like goosebump time. So I listened the second time on headphones, and it gets even better. And I ran to Charlie Minor and said, who are these guys?" "Oh, that's that punk band Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers." I went, "What? You're calling this record a punk band?" And he said, "Yeah, that's what radio stations have been telling us. Record's been out for 8 months and sold 12,000 copies, and we're dropping them from the label."
Ooh.
And my heart sank, man. I'm going, "You got to be kidding me."
Sounds like deja vu with the Johnny Cougar story.
It was exactly.
Yeah.
It was all serendipity stuff going on, you know. If I hadn't been fired by MCA, I would have never met Tom Petty. And so I got down, and he said, kept saying no, and I got down on my knees and begged him. I said, "Just give me 6 weeks. That's all I want. If I don't get anything, I'll quit." And so I went back to my office and started calling radio stations, and the majority of them said, "Oh, didn't we get that record a long time ago? We threw it away. It has a punk. It looked like a punk guy." And that was the problem with Tom's first album. He had a black leather jacket on with bullets around his neck, a smirk on his face, and long, stringy blonde hair.
Is that the picture you have on the cover of the book?
It is. It is the picture of the cover of the book. I never asked Tom why he did that. It's like, "Tom, do you know half the world didn't play your record because of that album cover?" But anyway, Charlie lets me. He gives me 6 weeks, but you can't spend any money, which is okay. And, well, not okay at the time, but I didn't care. I didn't even care. I was on a mission. So I just started calling stations and calling up promotion people because it was some stations were playing it in San Francisco. KSAN was playing it in San Jose. I think KSJL was playing it in Boston. BCN was playing it in Chicago. XRT was playing it, and they had success. So I kind of knew I was on to something. And about that time, Charlie Kendall, I'd say a day later, he had been out for a week, and he was starting a new radio station called K-West, K-W-S-T.
Oh, in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yep, to compete against K-M-E-T, which is hard to do.
I started to say good luck with that one.
Yeah, no kidding. The signal was crappy, too. And barely reached, I don't think he even reached the San Fernando Valley, but... Mm. Anyway, Charlie Kendall's, you know, he's got a great reputation. He's turned many a station around, and I took it over to him because he was one of my only real radio buddy friends. I've known him for a long time, and played the record for him, and he, after the record stopped, he looked at me, and we had glazed eyes. He had glazed eyes going, "Who the hell is this?
Wow.
This is one of the best albums I've ever heard in my life." And as a promotion guy, you're going, "All right. Vindication."
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Let's go. Let's go get this.
And he goes, "Well, are they any good live?" I went, "Charlie, I have no idea. I just picked the record up by accident 3 days ago." And he said, "I said I have no idea if they're good live, but I do know they're opening Saturday night for Blondie at the Whiskey by chance." He said, "Well, let's go." So we went, and then maybe there was 10 people in the Whiskey at the time. But Tom came on at 7. And did a 40-minute set. And we got there, sat in the middle, and he blew us away. If you've ever seen Tom Petty, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So Charlie leaned over when he was playing Breakdown. He said, "John, I'm going to start playing Breakdown on Monday morning, once an hour, every hour."
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, and a promotion man, you get the ad in your back pocket. You're kind of a happy guy. And so set was over, no encore, but it was incredible. It was like we had seen something that hadn't existed for a long time, that kind of music, a bird sound that he made into his own. And so I ran up stage, and there was no security, you know, for an opening act at the Whiskey. Tom was wiping his face off, sweat, and I said, "Hey, Tom, I am John Scott, the new head of album promotion for ABC Records." He said, "Well, I don't give a shit who you are. We hate ABC Records." He said, "For 8 months, they've done nothing for us. They've advertised us in teen magazine, punk magazines, but they've done nothing. So I don't like you." I went, "Okay, well, have you ever heard your record on the radio in Los Angeles?" He went, "No." I said, "Well, you're going to start hearing it on Monday morning on the new station in town, K-West, and here's the guy that's going to start doing it." He said, "Bullshit. Get out of here. You know, you're another nut job from ABC. I've seen many of them who promise things that they can't deliver."
Right.
He asked Stan Lynch, the drummer, "Hey, Stan, tell this new guy at ABC what ABC stands for."
This should be good.
And Stan Lynch goes, "You don't know?" I said, "No." He said, "A bunch of cocksuckers, ABC. And the band is just laughing their ass off, you know, and I kind of got a chuckle out of it at the same time. But anyway, so for some reason, I just turned around to him and I said, "How about this? I'm going to break your career." He went, "Oh, my God, get out of here. Get the fuck out of here." And they started escorting us out of the Whiskey dressing room. Outside, they had some steps outside going down. And as As I'm leaving, I turn again, and I don't know why I was saying these things, because I didn't know it for sure. Well, I'm going to break your career. I didn't know that for sure. But I had seen it and heard it. I turned to him, and I said, "Hey, Tom, my name's John Scott, and when you hear your record on the radio, you're going to think of me every time." And
don't
good for you.
Forget it.
Good for you, man.
And he points to the door.
Get out.
And Charlie and I were kind of laughing because we felt in our heart we knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So Charlie, Monday morning, starts playing it. And Wednesday, Tower Records called up and said, "Who are you playing this band, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers?" Charlie said, "Well, they're Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers." And they called us, had a sales, and ordered 250 copies.
Wow.
Yeah, and my sales manager came in and said, "John, do you know we're dropping this band? They just bought 250 copies. What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm going to break this guy's career." And he went, "Oh, my God," and just walked out.
That was the battle we did in sales, because the salespeople, you know, if they can't put product out in the marketplace, they just want to move on. And us promotion guys, we're the front line. We're the soldiers on the front line.
That's right.
No kidding.
Hey, John, I wanted to say that when you started breaking it, I was calling on a radio station in Toledo, Ohio, called WIOT.
Buckbeak Williams.
And I think it was, I can't remember, but bottom line, I was there calling on them, working my records, and they said, "Hey, listen, there's this guy in town. I've got to go see him. Something's going on with him." And so they took me, and it was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and they just blew me away.
Oh, yeah.
Is this story that you told us today on the podcast, I mean, is that in your book, kind of leading through some of the other great stories I'm sure you have with Tom Petty as his career progressed?
That's kind of the way it is, and because I wanted people to, fans, I don't think fans know how a band gets from 0 to 100.
Right.
You know, is it luck? Is it the singer's voice? Is it the songs? Or is it a combination of a lot of different things?
Hey, would you be interested in giving away maybe 5 books to our listeners and autograph it? Because I think you're going to definitely see a huge spike in sales, as they say, because me and Fred are going to break your career.
Yeah.
L.A. Lloyd, you got it, man. You got it.
Every time you hear your book.
Out in the ranch. What do you guys do out in the ranch, by the way?
Every time you hear your book, you're going to think of us, John.
No, I'll give you 5 copies, sure. Sure, you're welcome to do it, man. Anything for you guys, because Bob has told me so many great stories about you, L.A. Lloyd.
Well, John, so tell us title of your book one more time. We've got to sign off here.
Tom Petty and Me.
How
Tom
can
Petty
they get
and
it?
Me. And how can they
buy
get it?
It at TomPettyandMe.com, and I sign every book, and I personalize every book.
Nice.
Or you can buy it on Amazon or Amazon Kindle. And it's doing great. I really appreciate being on your show, guys. But, yeah, it's available, like I said, 3 different places, TomPettyMe.com, Amazon, Amazon Kindle. Real quick, I'll just tell you, Tom, I think I ended one segment there. Tom, when Tom called me, I picked up the phone, not knowing which way it was going to go. And he said, "John, I just want to apologize for kicking you out of the whiskey the other night. Are you serious?" I went, "Tom, I'm serious as I can be." And he said, "Will you come over to my house tonight?" I went, "Yeah." Went over there, and we bonded for life.
Wow.
Awesome.
40 years.
That's fantastic.
So a way that I'd love to give away these books is they got to listen to the podcast and hear your stories. So we'll make them, or ask them, I should say, to send us a word so we know they listen to the podcast. So I'll let you pick that word, and I want you to describe Tom Petty, if you can, in one word. What would that be?
Funny, humble.
That's 2 words,
that's
John.
That's 2, John.
I know. Well, I can't describe him in one word. He was humble. He was a genius.
That's 3 words.
Genius is the word. I like genius.
I like humble.
Do you?
But I like funny, too.
Well, I tell you what, if you're listening to it this far in the podcast, if you give us one of those 3 words,
that's good.
You're eligible for the drawing to get one of these autographed copies of Tom Petty and Me from John Scott.
There you go.
There you go. And I'll tell you, when you get my book, I'll send it to you guys, and you'll see why I say the word funny.
He seems like a funny guy.
Well, you wouldn't know the side of the story until you read about me and him faxing each other, and he would fax me back. And I saved these faxes for 40 years. There's about 12 different faxes on there, and you talking about funny. This is like two kids, Southern boys, with a, you know, with a new toy. Fax machine.
For you kids out there, fax is something that was before email. Just, you know, for those of you who don't know what a fax machine is.
It was a copy that was sent, which was transmitted.
Over a phone line. And it was magical the first time I ever got my first fax. I was like, holy cow, this is great.
Thermal paper, too. Crappy paper.
John, thank you. It was a wonderful interview. Thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Good luck with your show, and yeah, get both Bubbas on there. You'll die laughing, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thanks again, John.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks, Eli Lloyd.
Promotion Man, the true backstories of the most iconic bands in the world, told by Fred Myers and interviewed by me, L.A. Lloyd. Get involved and interact on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You'll find the links at promotion-man.com. That's promotion-man.com. Download the weekly Promotion Man podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider. We appreciate you subscribing and spreading the word, and thanks for listening.